I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tonight on Frontline, supplements and safety. It's an investigation done with the New York Times and the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Half of all Americans take a health supplement every single day, a multivitamin, a vitamin D or E or fish oil or one of 83,000 supplements that are on the market. The documentary, which airs tonight, asks some very important questions about this industry, and they talk to people who have regulated the industry, such as it is, the kind of regulations that exist, which are not very wide-ranging. They've talked to a number of scientists who have studied what's in multivitamins. So we're going to ask, what's in these supplements? Have there been peer-reviewed studies of effectiveness? Can they be harmful? And why is the industry largely unregulated? Why do we love the notion of taking a magic pill, which many of us take? Our guest this hour is the writer of tonight's very interesting documentary. She's an award-winning Canadian television journalist who's worked for the CBC and ABC, Jillian Findlay. She's co-host of the CBC TV magazine series The Fifth Estate, which has won many journalism awards, international Emmys, and she, along with the New York Times and PBS's Frontline, has been recognized with the Pulitzer, Peabody, Polk, and many other very prestigious awards. I think we're going to get a lot of phone calls on this. And we sure do welcome them. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Jillian, thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Kathleen. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely fascinating documentary. And it is true that so many of us take these pills. I do, too. I mean, I take fish oil every day for my heart. Now I'm thinking about my fish oil this morning because I watched your documentary last night. So I'll ask you about that later. But it's amazing how many multivitamins and dietary supplements there are in the market. I mean, tens of thousands of them. And how they really are not very well regulated is astounding, isn't it?
Well, I was shocked. I mean, first of all, let me say I'm Canadian, so, you know, I was delving into a whole new world when I tried to figure out the U.S. regulatory system. But, yes, I was shocked. I just assumed that, you know, perhaps the regulation isn't as strict and perhaps shouldn't be as strict as with pharmaceutical drugs. But I thought there must be some basic level mm-hmm. of regulation that would assure me as a consumer that when I go into a drugstore or a pharmacy or to a health food store and buy one of these supplements, that somebody has at least looked at this to say, you know, this is what the label says it is. It is effective for what they're claiming. And most importantly, that it's safe. And I was shocked to discover that really none of those things are true.
Absolutely none of them. It is remarkable. And in some instances, I think, tell me how many this was the case, sometimes the very ingredient that's supposed to be used for menopause or some other ailment was nowhere to be found in the multivitamin or in the supplement. It just wasn't there.
I mean, we found studies going back for many years where people had actually done these kinds of surveys where they go out, and this is particularly a problem, I think, with the herbal supplements. You know, they go out and they buy things like the echinaceas and the ginsengs and the black cohosh, you mentioned, which is often prescribed for menopausal symptoms. And when they actually do testing, and a really important survey was done in 2013 where they actually use DNA barcoding as a way to test what was in these products, they discovered, this was a test done at Guelph University in Canada, that fully 60% did not contain the ingredient that was advertised on the label. One out of three was an absolute fake. So, yeah, I mean, put aside the question of do these things work, let's just start with a very basic question, are what they say they are? And when you come across information like that, it really does make you wonder.
And even more troubling is that some of these may be downright dangerous to your health.
Well, that's it. I mean, if you don't know what's in it, how do you know that it's not dangerous to your health? And there, you know, there have been anecdotal stories, and we include some of them in our documentary tonight, of people who have taken products only to discover later that the products, for whatever reason, have been contaminated with other things, and they have, there are consequences to those things. So it's not simply a matter of, you know, something that's benign. I mean, maybe you're paying for something that really isn't there, but who cares? It doesn't matter. There might be something there that it can actually cause you harm. And that's where I think this gets, you know, sort of passes from being just interesting to being really important.
Absolutely. You have many interviews in the documentary, one of them with David Kessler, who was with the FDA as the head of the agency in the early 80s, demanding, he did, health claims should be backed up by scientific evidence. And his words were, the industry went bonkers.
Absolutely, the industry went bonkers. And for those who may recognize that name but not remember, let me just remind you that David Kessler, who was the head of the FDA in the early 90s, took on the tobacco industry. So his bona fides are pretty good. You know, he knows what he's doing. And he tried to implement what seems, you know, on the surface, seemed a fairly, I think, innocuous and rather logical thing. You know, just if you're going to tell me that something is going to cure my cancer or to improve my immune system, provide some evidence to back that up. You know, you can't just say something and pass it off as being true. And as he said, the industry went bonkers. I mean, it organized, it lobbied, it pulled in, you know, all the markers it had with congressmen and people in power in Washington who, you know, had their own ties to the industry in numerous different ways. Pulled in Hollywood stars. I mean, there's some fabulous video in the piece tonight of a PSA that, that Mel Gibson appears in.
Right.
You know, warning people that, you know, some guy's going to be coming into your kitchen wanting to take your vitamin C away. This was the tenor of the debate. And, you know, at the time, the industry called on consumers to write to their congressman or woman and to complain about this proposed legislation. People did. And, in fact, Congress got more letters about this proposed legislation than they did about the Vietnam War. I mean, it's astounding what they were able to organize. And in the end, you know, the legislation that Kessler wanted passed didn't pass.
Mm-hmm. Although manufacturers, was this a result of that legislation, cannot make unproven health claims?
Yes, there were some compromises made along the way and over the years. And so now it is a case that you can't, for instance, say product A will cure cancer or product B will prevent heart disease. You can say, for instance, product C can bolster immune health or, you know, something to that effect. I mean, something that there's a lot of language, dancing around language here. And I think if you take those kinds of so-called claims and you say them often enough and a loud enough volume and, you know, in a way that that hits people in a very emotional way, I think people come to the conclusion that obviously the manufacturer wants you to come to, and that is that you take this product and it is going to either protect you from disease or certainly make the disease that you already have better. And often there is no scientific evidence whatsoever to back that up.
Right. Let's talk about these really horrendous cases, and this one centers in Hawaii. This diet and workout supplement, Oxy Elite Pro, they put evidently a new compound in it. People didn't know there was a new compound in it. They bought it from a Chinese drug company, and people got very, very sick.
Yeah, that's the allegation. I'll just start by saying that all of this is now currently before the courts in a myriad of different lawsuits, so the official narrative hasn't been established yet. But yes, what the allegation is that the makers of OxyElite Pro, a company called USP Labs, they had an earlier formulation on the market that for years there had been adverse side effects associated with. Eventually, the FDA forced them to pull that formulation off the market. Within a matter of months, they came back with a new formulation, including a new active ingredient. This is one that allegedly was purchased from a Chinese company. Within, you know, a few months of that being on the market, all of a sudden, in Hawaii, of all places, there was a cluster of liver failures. People who, you know, they have one liver transplant center on the island, and they were being overrun with calls of people who, you know, were having young people, fit people, who were having problems with their liver all of a sudden. When they traced it all back, they realized the commonality was this workout supplement they were taking. And in the end, at least one person died. A number had to have liver transplants. We actually profile a woman in the story, and it's a very sad story.
Yes.
You know, she's in San Diego. She's a chief petty officer in the Navy, 23-year veteran. She's a woman of middle age. She has to make certain fitness tests as a part of her training and as a part of her job. She was taking this OxyElite Pro as a workout supplement. It was helping her to make weight. She really liked it. It was working for her. And then halfway through the bottle, her eyes started turning yellow.
Oh.
By the time she gets to the doctor and they figure out what's going on, her liver's failing. Mm. She ended up having a transplant. And that, in essence, is the end of her naval career. You know, she's 23 years in, wanted that 25-year service pin. She's not going to get it because she now has to take 19 other drugs every day to support the new liver that she had transplanted. And, you know, that's not the kind of stuff they carry on the ships that she works on.
And yeah.
That's it.
Oh.
That's done.
So, and many of us don't take OxyElite Pro or those kinds of drugs, but how many of us, you know, pop vitamin C pills, we take vitamin D, particularly here, we don't get enough sunshine, we have cold winters, we take fish oil, which I know other people take this as well for our hearts, we take vitamin E, we take all of these, but you also point to the fact and interview quite a few doctors who say we may be taking way too much of all of this.
Way too much is what the overall message that came back. You know, it starts with those, what they call the antioxidants.
Mm-hmm.
These are the vitamin C and E and A and the beta carotenes. And, the antioxidants were very big, continue to be very big. Everybody knows about them. They're the things that are supposed to help us fight those free radicals, which are going to cause the cancers and the heart disease that we're all so afraid of. And so, you know, it starts with the notion that, yes, there's certain antioxidants in certain foods, and people who eat a lot of those foods tend to be healthier. So if we can just give those properties to people in a supplement, that will impart good health. And if you give it to them in a formulation that, you know, ramps up the amount that they're getting, that must be even better. And so we get to the point now, and this is the theories that are being put forward by people like Dr. Paul Offit, who wrote a book, Do You Believe in Magic? He's very concerned about this because he says we are now at the point where we are routinely taking mega doses of vitamins, and we think that, you know, either they're doing us good, or if they're not doing us good, they're certainly not doing us harm. But the scientific evidence is now building to suggest that there is no safe level, you know, that there will come a point where you can take too much, and that in itself can predispose you to the very kinds of diseases that you think you're preventing. So it really is. I was really surprised to hear a lot of the information that I learned in this, you know, and as Offit says, for whatever reason, it's not out there in the general population,
no,
this information. People really don't understand this yet, and he's quite concerned that we have to start understanding this because we have to start changing our behavior around these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's espoused by people who are on television all the time who wouldn't talk to you in tonight's Frontline program saying the vitamin I would take is this or you need to take this, and people listen to those
sure
doctors
they do.
On TV.
The Dr. Rozes, the Andrew Wiles, yes, of course. And you know, you don't have to spend very much time on television or on the internet or, you know, I actually, as a research thing, signed up to one of their websites, and my goodness, I can't get off it now.
Oh, I'll bet you can't.
I'm getting 3 emails a day telling me I should be taking different supplements. I'm not in any way suggesting, or calling into question their motives for this, but I think it's a fair question to ask of those people. If you're so convinced of this, show me the evidence that tells me that what you're saying is true. And when you put the question to them like that, they don't have much evidence that they can bring to the table. And in this particular case, as you point out, we spent quite a bit of time trying to get them to talk to us about this,
right.
And none of them would.
Yeah. All right, fish oil for just a moment, if you don't mind, because I've been taking it for 8 years now. I even give it to my dog for arthritis. I thought that it was really good for my heart. I thought it was good for his arthritis. Uh-huh. And then I saw the Frontline show, and there are problems with lots of fish oils.
There's problems with lots of fish oils. Yes, there is. And broadly speaking, there's two issues that if you take fish oil that you should know about. One is that the commercially available fish oil, the kind of stuff that you go into your pharmacy or your health food store and you buy off the shelf, there is a good chance that oil may, in fact, be rancid. Now, I can't tell you what the chance is. There have been different, consumer surveys in different countries that have come up with differing figures. But survey after survey has shown that often those fish oils are rancid. And that means that the oil has been exposed to oxygen along the way, which is, and this is not unusual with oils. They tend to be delicate, and when exposed to oxygen, they produce oxidized oil. The problem with oxidized oil is that it produces oxidized lipids, and that, scientists say, is what is potentially dangerous, that the oxidized lipids create inflammation within the body and within the different systems of the body. And those are the kinds of things. Nobody yet has figured out what the mechanism is precisely, but they know that there is some kind of correlation between inflammation and disease. So that's the first issue with fish oil. The second one is, you're right, I mean, fish oil, if you listen to the advertising, the publicity, cures everything, you know,
yes.
Alzheimer's, heart disease, arthritis, you name it. You know, why aren't we all taking fish oil? But when you, again, when you get beyond the marketing campaign and you actually drill down on the science that has been done, and there is quite a bit of science out there that has been done, over long periods of time, including big populations, you know, double-blind, placebo-controlled, all of those things that make a good scientific survey. Survey after survey has shown, and we interview a man tonight who has done a study of the studies, who basically says there is no evidence, especially when it comes to heart disease, there is no evidence that fish oil actually provides the kind of protection that we are regularly told,
yes.
that it does. And that his concern is that we are just literally wasting our money.
And it's not cheap.
It's not cheap. Now, that's not to say that there's not... Clearly, there are some properties in fish oil that are consistent with good health. And if you eat fish, they know that people eat a lot of fish in their diet tend to be healthier. What the science has yet to prove, though, is that if you take your oil in supplement form, that you are going to get that same beneficial effect. That's not been proven.
All right, let's invite our listeners to join this conversation. I know you haven't had a chance to see the show. It airs tonight, the PBS Frontline piece, and it's a collaboration with the New York Times and the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Jillian Finley is our guest. She wrote the script and she did the interviews for tonight's broadcast, and it's well worth looking at. I think you'll certainly have a lot more questions about this industry and why it's not regulated and what may be in some of these supplements and what's beneficial and what's not beneficial and who's selling it and how Congress responded to a desire to regulate the industry, at least giving us information as to what's in supplements. And some of the information is very disturbing because there are people who've become very, very sick, and there are claims now that some people have died because of, remember, the weight loss supplement that when a major league pitcher died from evidently taking a supplement, and then there were many other cases. And even the vitamins that we take, you know, we somehow have it in our heads that if you take more than what the recommended daily amount is, then you're going to feel even better and you're going to ward against the flu and cancer and heart disease and everything. So where is the truth and why is this not regulated? Jillian Finley is our guest. She's an award-winning Canadian television journalist. You will see her tonight on Frontline. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk@WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to the many phone calls that have come in and also to messages that we have. And let's start with a message, Jillian. Steve asks, are these vitamins and supplements better regulated outside the U.S., like in Canada or in Europe?
They're regulated differently, to my understanding. I live in Canada, and we did a program for the Canadian Broadcasting Association Corporation as well. It is different than the U.S. Critics would argue that on paper, at least, it is better in the sense, in quotation marks, in the sense that there is some pre-market information that manufacturers have to provide. But it is not robust by anybody's interpretation of that term. And there is a lot of discussion in this country and people in this country who think that we have to do more for all the same reasons that we raised in the documentary about the U.S. regulatory system. Europe, I don't know so much about, only to tell you, because we didn't, we at one point discussed, you know, going to Europe and doing a comparison. For a bunch of reasons, we didn't do that, but from that initial research, I can tell you it is much more difficult to get a supplement approved for sale in Europe because they do have many more regulations around having to provide evidence of efficacy and safety. So I think for whatever reasons, the United States seems to be the place where, you know, the manufacturers, I guess, like to be because there are fewer questions being asked.
Mm-hmm. All right, two phone calls. Gail in Fish Creek. Hi, Gail.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a very alternative person, and I'm extremely sensitive to a lot of things. I don't take drugs. But my issue is that I'm hoping that this program tonight does have an unbiased view because some of the things that your guest is saying right now are wrong because supplements and vitamins and minerals, they do have a regulatory standard right now. There are regulations that are put out on them. And what I've been listening to so far is implying that there aren't. And then the issue of Dr. Kessler, I'm hoping that they also, people are aware that he also was working diligently, wasting taxpayer money, trying to steal Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski's cancer cocktail formula because he was actually healing people from cancer and children with cancer. And the high courts actually told him to find something else to do because Dr. Brzezinski was completely within the law and his rights, even though they were raiding his office.
All right, Gail, but before we go, let's go back to the first thing you said. Why do you believe that the industry is very well regulated?
It's regulated because everything is a natural supplement. And when they're, when you're looking at and weighing the two, when you're looking at drugs right now that are being put on in commercials and being pushed for people to be taking, whether they really actually need them or not is borderline. And you look at another commercial, and it's for a class action lawsuit because people are dying. There are more people and more deaths and more adverse side effects from drugs, manufactured drugs, than there are from supplements. And I think that this really needs to be a truth that people need to know.
Jillian.
Well, that doesn't answer your question, which I'm also waiting to hear the answer to. What is the regulation that you're pointing to around supplements that allows you to come to the conclusion that they are regulated, aside from the comparison you want to make to pharmaceuticals?
And tell me about the regulations. What kind of regulation process is there, Jillian? What's required of people who make any kind of multivitamin or vitamin D or whatever?
Well, virtually, if you're talking about pre-market approval, and that's usually what regulation starts with, is, you know, who do you have to take your product to, and what questions do they ask you, and what evidence do they ask you for to show that your product is effective and safe? You know, it is quite clear, and we, in the piece tonight, we include an interview that we did with the acting commissioner of the FDA at the time, and he's quite clear. He says the FDA does not do any review of dietary supplements before they come into the market. And he says, I think that that's something consumers do need to understand. He understands that, you know, there is this perception out there that there is pre-market approval, and there's not. What there is, and this is a relatively recent development, is the FDA does require manufacturers now to show that they follow good manufacturing practices. Now, that's all about how they manufacture something. It's not about what they manufacture or what about, you know, the ingredients that come in and that these supplements are ultimately made from. That the FDA does have a mandate to enforce that, but here's the trick. 4,000 plus manufacturers in the United States, as Dr. Stephen Ostroff points out, he said, we don't even know for sure how many people there are, because you don't even have to register as a manufacturer with the FDA when you start making supplements. But 4,000 plus is the estimate. He has a division of 25 people. So, you know, just do the simple arithmetic. How vigorous can that process be?
Mm-hmm. You do in the documentary, and I would imagine this might stir things up some in addition to your documentary, 14 states' attorneys general, I believe New York is at the lead here, have been demanding change, and they have taken action on over 100 companies?
Yes. This stems from those surveys that were done that showed that there was adulteration and contamination, largely with the herbal products. I mentioned, I think, the study that was done at Guelph University in Canada in 2013. That study actually got picked up by the New York Times, and the story was read by the New York Attorney General. He was surprised to hear those findings, and so he commissioned his own study to find out, you know, if this was true in New York State as well. And he, you know, his people pulled off products at random from different, you know, some of the big distributors and suppliers, the retailers in New York. And lo and behold, the results he got were even worse. He found that only 20%, like one in five, actually contain the ingredients that were being advertised on the bottle. He called it massive fraud. Now, what he did at that point is he, you know, cease and desist. You can no longer sell these until you can prove to us that, you know, you are in fact providing the product that you say you are. The industry's response, the official industry response, was to question the methodology, the testing, the methods that they had used to come to these conclusions, the DNA barcoding, which is the technology that was being used. But since then, some companies increasingly are coming around and sort of acknowledging, you know, we do have a problem here. If nothing else, we've got a credibility problem with consumers. And so they are now starting to implement this kind of DNA testing in their own supply line so that they can, you know, assure their consumers that at least the product is what they think they're buying. But yes, you know, this was Eric Schneiderman who took this initiative. He's since been joined by 14 other attorneys general in the United States. They are calling upon Congress to change legislation to close this what they, you know, they describe as this huge gap that allows manufacturers to, you know, to make products without any kind of oversight. And, you know, and he's calling on the industry to clean up its act. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you would think it would be in the industry's interest.
Yes, you would. Jillian, I still don't understand. You're selling stuff. You're in the supermarket. All the things that you're buying, the tomato sauce, the pasta, it all has to say what the ingredients are in all the things that we buy. I don't understand how this whole huge industry escapes regulation. How did that happen historically?
Well, you have to go back to that legislation, the early 90s, when David Kessler was at the head of the FDA, and then one of the things he wanted to do when he came in was to address some of these issues. By that point, there had been enough crises that had happened in, you know, involving different supplements in different ways, and he saw that this is a big problem, and he wanted to bring in legislation to deal with it. And he started out by saying, look, all I want to do is start by saying, if you're going to make a health claim, you're going to have to provide the evidence to show that that claim is true. And immediately, and he's very good on this, you know, this is David Kessler who took on the tobacco industry. I mean, he's no shrinking violet. He knows his way around these issues. And, you know, the industry essentially goes to war against him, in his words. And he ultimately, you know, loses that. Now, subsequently, there were some measures that were introduced that you know, provide, I think, a consumer a certain level of protection, and that is the good manufacturing process that we talked about. There is language now about what they can and can't say about health claims that they want to make. But, you know, the truth of the matter is the issues exist because there's a very powerful industry behind them, and they are not afraid of fighting. Mm. And have done historically, and I think continue to do today.
Mm-hmm. Gail, thanks for your call. Greg in Madison. Hi, Greg.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to just kind of revisit this topic that we keep coming around about this lack of regulations in the dietary supplement industry. I've been in the probiotic area for the last 22 years in research and development, doing lots of clinical work showing benefits of potential probiotics, and we haven't touched on that. We've focused on botanicals and vitamins in this call. But in our company, the amount of resources that we dedicate to following the Code of Federal Regulations dedicated to dietary supplements is enormous. So when talk shows consistently state that the industry isn't regulated, it makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up, because
tell me if I could just jump in, because I'm curious. We did not look at probiotics. I mean, at some point we had to limit, you know, where we were going to go with this documentary. But what are the regulations that you're speaking about specifically? I mean, are you talking about research that you've had to do to prove that your product is safe and effective?
Yep, so two separate areas. One would be, and you mentioned this before, rightly so, that there's GMPs or good manufacturing practices that cover the industry. Part of the GMPs includes identifying everything that goes in the product, having proper product labels, having all the inactive ingredients labeled, and everything that needs to be in there either needs to be an approved dietary ingredient, which goes through either an approval process or a GRAS process, or the FDA needs to be notified that it's a new dietary ingredient and they review it.
Yes, so thank you for pointing that out.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't address, and I'm not trying to argue with you, I'm just curious, that doesn't address the efficacy and safety. I mean, it does speak to, you know, what is in the bottle. I don't know then how you find survey after survey that shows, you know, in particular with the herbal products, that what is in the bottle is not what's on the label. But what you're describing to me doesn't sound like you're showing that probiotics actually have the effect, you know, scientifically proven effect that people are being told.
And we operate in the world of structure function language, which you referred to earlier,
yes,
supporting immune health. There have been legal challenges on what kind of efficacy requirements you need to have to back that up.
Yes.
Very big companies have just fought with the FTC about this. So that's kind of a moving target right now. But I can tell you that there are ethical dietary supplement companies out there doing proper clinical research, not to drug levels. Because remember, we have to do studies in a healthy population. We're not providing pharmaceuticals. We're providing dietary supplements. So the onus is on us, and it's even more challenging, in my opinion, to do proper clinical work in a healthier subject population and show that there is going to be some benefits.
Yeah, and I'm not at all discrediting what you're saying, because I know that there are good companies out there and people who are doing, you know, work because they want to provide a good product. The point that people are raising is they're not, you know, there is no regulatory authority that is forcing that, and so you can have all the good companies in the world, but if you don't, you know, the bad companies don't have to adhere to a standard either, and that they claim is the issue.
And from what you're saying in the documentary, there are more bad companies than there are good companies, a lot more.
Well, certainly, you know, the FDA will acknowledge that that there are bad companies. I mean, we did an interview with Daniel Fabricant, who's now the head of the biggest lobbying industry organization, the National Products Association. He used to be at the FDA as head of the Dietary Supplement Division, and this, you know, one of the issues around this is this revolving door between industry and regulation. But, you know, he points out that in his time there, they actually, you know, did do investigations of some companies. They shut down, I think he said, 25 different companies. Again, if you're talking about, you know, 4,000-plus manufacturers,
right,
I think it's fair to ask, you know, is 25%, what does that really represent? But, you know, we when we did the interview with Mr. Fabricant, we actually had some PowerPoint presentations from a presentation he had given at an industry conference a couple of years earlier when he was at the FDA. And in his own words, he was acknowledging that the industry has a problem.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Greg, very much for your call. Dean in Pulaski. Hi, Dean.
Hello. My question is about Herbalife, and if you have done any research on that, or if it's in the Frontline show, I'm excited to watch it.
No, No, I know the Herbalife story, and I know there are people who have done work on that, but it was not part of what we tackle tonight in our show.
Paul sends this email. I do believe a lot of hanky-panky is going on in the supplement industry, but I would like to ask about the other side, that is the pressure and tactics of pharmaceutical companies to reduce and co-op competition from supplements. Does that play any role in this topic?
You know, one of the big misconceptions, I think, is that we're talking about, you know, David and Goliath here. You know, we've got the big bad pharma as Goliath, and we've got the little supplement industry as David. The truth of the matter is, you know, a lot of the big pharmaceutical companies also have supplement divisions. So, you know, it's a much muddier waters than you think. And, you know, look, Is there efforts on behalf of the big pharma to undercut the popularity of supplements? Yeah, probably there is. I mean, I'm not naive about this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, let's not get stray too far from you know, the fundamentals of the argument here, and that is pharma, for, you know, whatever it's doing, at least is regulated. At least there's a standard that they have to adhere to. The supplement industry doesn't.
Rod is next. Hi, Rod.
Yes, hello, Kathleen. Good. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
See, I just kind of curious. I jumped on that bandwagon a few times. I'm on and off once in a while. Like vitamin C pills, I'll buy them once in a while, the chewable ones, because they get sweet tooth. You know, I feel well, and they're doing you good. But I do take some fish oil, you know, because like now in the winter. And I'm just wondering if you do know offhand, if you do buy them, do you have like a brand that is, you know, more so trustworthy or not? And also, is there such a thing, you know, they used to call berry? Is that the same as scurvy? The guys on the ships years ago used to get that, they said, because they didn't have enough greens or fruits.
Oh, boy. I'm being tested here, Kathleen. I don't know the answer to berry, but I think it's different than scurvy. You'll have to Google it and find out. And I'm not going to go anywhere near trying to suggest what brand names you should be buying. I will tell you, though, that there are, and you can go on the Internet and find them, there are some independent consumer groups that do their own testing of different brands, and they publish their results. And so if you're really curious to know, seek them out, and there'll at least be some information there that you can draw upon.
How many people, you had people from very esteemed news organizations work on this documentary. How many of those of you who worked on this at the end of your investigation said, oh my gosh, this is changing my life?
Yeah, no, I think we all did, some more than others. We also made a point of everybody we interviewed asking them what supplements they took. And it was very interesting because, you know, we had some scientists who say pox in all their houses. I don't believe in any of it. I take absolutely nothing. We had, you know, the flip side of that, people from the industry who, you know, started reciting a list as long as your arm of all the different things they take and swear by each one of them and say they've never felt better in their lives. And, you know, we even had some people in between sort of, you know, really, really struggling with this. You know, we interviewed a woman at the Philadelphia Children's Hospital, and, you know, they took part of the documentary tonight is the stand that they took against supplements because they were so concerned that they had so many parents coming in with their children, literally with shopping bags full of supplements. Mm. And, you know, the hospital didn't know what was in this stuff. They didn't know how to dispense it. You know, they decided that it wasn't responsible for them to dispense without knowing. And so they actually challenged manufacturers to provide evidence to back up, you know, basically back up the claims that were on the labels. And when they sent out these letters, 90% of the manufacturers didn't even bother to get back to them. So that told them something. And even the ones that did, some of them provided information that in essence proved that the product was not what it was, or it was not in the formulation that they were claiming it was. So she, you know, this is not a woman who's predisposed to taking supplements. And yet, you know, when I asked her, she said, you know, I take a multivitamin, I take calcium, I'm a woman of a certain age, and I my doctor tells me that I should take calcium, and when you take calcium, they often tell you should be taking vitamin D, so, yeah, I know the science out there, but, you know, I do it too.
Interesting.
Very complicated.
Was the Children's Hospital the same place where they were using the vitamin D drops and they found they were way more than the infant should be receiving? That was
exactly.
An alarming story.
Exactly. And that's you know, why they were so concerned, because they were dealing in a lot of cases with very small children, even premature infants. And, you know, doctors were prescribing these things, and they had no way of knowing, you know, because of the whole system of unregulated system, they had no guarantee that it was what they were the company was claiming. And
mm-hmm.
So that's what started them on it.
Mm. Thanks, Rod, very much for your call. Victoria in Duluth. Hello, Victoria.
Hello. Yeah, I wanted to go on. This is a dosage problem that I ran into recently. I had found out that B6 or niacin is very good for your heart, so I was taking it as a preventative measure. And it started a month after I started taking it. All of a sudden, my whole body started to tingle. Mm. I got hot. I did not sweat. And my body turned bright sunburn red.
Ooh.
Yes. And this would happen periodically. Well, finally, I called my doctor. I'm worried now. Well, she almost immediately diagnosed it as niacin.
Oh.
And when I went, I had thrown away the nuts. The bottle, but I had thrown away the package that it came in, and by this time the bottle was gone too, because it was only like a 30-day supply or something. And only I went to the drugstore. Come to find out, it was 2,500 times times the amount.
Yes.
Which I had, you know, I had not bothered to read, and I had brought the bottle with me to the doctor. She hadn't, you know, we were just happily taking niacin,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I just wanted to let people know that again, as always, read the label.
Right. Jillian, that's true. You pointed that we're taking way over recommended doses of something like vitamin C. We've heard recommendations from some, you know, just sort of common wisdom. Oh, take a lot of vitamin C.
Yeah.
Double your dose of vitamin C. Take it every hour. And somehow that we just do what people say works for them.
Well, this goes back to the work that was done years ago by Dr. Linus Pauling. I mean, he was the one that sort of popularized this
yes.
whole notion of mega doses of vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
And even though in the scientific world, those theories have been discredited now. For decades, in the popular press and in, you know, the world that we all live in, that hasn't really filtered down, and so you still find people taking mega doses. You know, the recommended daily intake level of vitamin C for an adult is 60 milligrams a day. Well, we interviewed Dr. Paul Offit, who, you know, in fairness, has become a bit of an evangelist on this, because he thinks we're taking way too much of many vitamins, and he says, look at, you know, let your body speak to you. He said, 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C. Now that's, you know, that those formulations are out there. You can easily find that in your drugstore. 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C. If you were to get that much vitamin C from a food source, let's say cantaloupes, you'd have to sit down and eat the equivalent of 7 to 8 full-size cantaloupes.
Oh, goodness.
Your stomach cannot, you physically cannot do that. And he says, listen to that. That's telling you something. You know, when you're looking at these doses, I mean, he had another one with vitamin E. You know, I've forgotten what the international units were that he said that he was pointing to, but the equivalent in almonds was 1,600 almonds. Well, you'd never sit down and eat 1,600 almonds a day. That should be telling you something. You know, you're getting a lot of these vitamins in your regular diet, and you know the dirty little secret is we all think we have such terrible diets. We're all getting a lot more nutrition than we really know, and especially around some of these vitamins that are commonly now sold in mega doses, there is a concern that you can take too much.
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, the one of the most prestigious scientific journals in the world, the Annals of Internal Medicine, they published an editorial, and they called it Enough is Enough. And what they said is essentially that we got to stop this. You know, that we are now at the point where we are crossing over into potentially dangerous territory, that your average well-nourished adult does not need supplementation of any kind, and that really we're wasting our money.
Mm. More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about tonight's Frontline documentary, Supplements and Safety. Check your local listings. It is tonight on PBS. And Gillian Finley did the interviews, wrote tonight's script. She's an award-winning Canadian television journalist who's worked for the CBC and ABC. She's co-host of the CBC TV magazine series The Fifth Estate, which has won all kinds of awards. And tonight's, I can guarantee you, because most of us take some kind of supplement, you will think very carefully about your intake of supplements and about the whole industry after you see tonight's Frontline. It's not very well regulated, and what we're taking, we've been led to believe, is going to make us healthier people and ward off disease, and we need to look at scientific evidence, which may tell a different story. More phone calls momentarily. Victoria, thanks for your call. 800-486-8655 is the number. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls for Jillian and to Margie in Milwaukee. Hi, Margie.
Hi. Hi. I apologize. I've only caught the last 10 or 15 minutes of your show. But I got the question about the beriberi, and I'm a registered dietitian, and I didn't know if you wanted me to just let you know that that's a vitamin B1 deficiency, a thiamine.
Okay.
And it has nothing to do with scurvy, and it's very rare, and it happens more often maybe in someone that's alcoholic, that's drinking quite a bit and not eating enough of anything. But thiamine is pretty available in most of our grains, because it's been added, all the B vitamins are added back in and that sort of thing. So it's not usually a big concern.
And Margie,
I have had clients over the years bring in bags of supplements that I would have to try and sort out and see what might be affecting them and what might not. So I'm looking forward to your program tonight greatly.
I'm sure you will find it of great interest. Margie, thank you very much for your call, and let us go to Donna in Hartford. Hi, Donna.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you so much. I think a lot of this comes down to buyer beware. I, too, am someone that takes a variety of natural supplements, but I also go to professionals who help check my body to determine what it is that my body needs. And I've also had regular medical doctors hand me lists of things that they have found over the years that are harmful and that you might want to, you know, be careful about. There are unscrupulous manufacturers. There's also manufacturers that follow if you don't want to say they're not regulated, but they have set up their own scrupulous guidelines to make sure that their product is good. You have to know what you're doing. I think natural supplements fall into a category of many other things that we can put into our bodies. They're you need to know what your body needs. You need to be aware of your health and your needs, and go to trained professionals to understand, you know, better what those things are. You want to look for whole food supplements. You want to look for supplements that are cold processed. Anything else is adulterated. Stay away from it. There are certain supplement lines and labels that are only carried by professionals like chiropractors and naturopathic doctors. Talk to them about, go there, talk to them about what their, why they handle those products and such like that.
When it, all right, where would you go, Jillian, after doing the documentary to find things? You mentioned the internet, but shouldn't there be a list? Because people are going to keep taking these supplements.
Yeah, of course they are, because, you know, first of all, if people believe something's helping them, sometimes it really is helping them. You know, we all know about the placebo
sure.
effect. And I'm not here to say that, you know, nobody should ever take a supplement. I mean, my goodness, that would be way beyond my area of expertise. I think it's just people, as your caller just so very eloquently said, people have to beware. You've got to do some research. And frankly, it's not easy to find this information.
No.
Because you'd think that you might be able to go to a regulator and sort of get some good answers, or be able to rely on a regulator to make sure that those unscrupulous manufacturers are not getting onto market. But that's the piece that's missing in the United
yes.
States. That's the
yes.
that's the message number one. You know, what do I do? I mean, I try to get as many, nutrients from the food I eat. Every person that we interviewed this, we asked them, so what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, eat well. Start by doing that. Eat a balanced diet. Eat, what we've all been told by our mothers and others, eat vegetables, eat fruit. We know people that eat well are in better health, period, regardless of what they're taking as supplements. Some people do actually have identifiable deficiencies that mm-hmm. do need supplementation, but it's a very, very few people. Before you assume that you are one of those, find out if you're one of those. Go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. Often this kind of stuff requires a blood test to be able to tell you for sure.
Test, yeah.
Seek out information from people who know better than you. Don't go to the web.
Out. Exactly. Don't watch charlatans. Jillian, we're out of time. Thank you so much. It's an important documentary and so well done. Congratulations and thanks.
Thanks for your time. Good to talk to you.
Jillian Finley, an award-winning Canadian television journalist. The show airs tonight, Supplements and Safety. Watch it. Let us know what you think about it. It's very well done and challenging. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the show and for on-air production. Thanks for listening.